From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on March 25th when the leaders of two countries made two very different comments about the coronavirus pandemic. In New Zealand, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern offered an informal address via social media telling New Zealanders that the country was choosing to move into a more restrictive lockdown. Ardern said that if they worked together, the lockdown would be difficult but short, and the caseload would likely rise and then fall dramatically if they did it right. She offered advice on how families could construct safe bubbles. She said she would answer any question about the policy and that she would conform to every guideline that she set for families. In the United States, despite dramatically rising case numbers at the time, President Donald Trump said he wanted the country to reopen by Easter, April 12th. He called for an American resurrection, a glorious reopening in the face of a deadly pandemic. Since that day, New Zealand has become the worldwide standard for dealing with the disease. And yes, that country has a natural geographic advantage, but the swift action and clear leadership offered an easy model for that nation to follow. As a result, New Zealand has had 22 COVID deaths. If New Zealand's population was the same as the United States, that would translate to 1,430 COVID deaths. Meanwhile, the United States has seen more than 124,000 deaths from COVID, and our caseload has plateaued. New Zealand is not only back open just about fully, but there isn't much emphasis on masking, not because it's not important, but because there has not been community spread in New Zealand for weeks. In the United States, there is community spread everywhere, but millions are vowing to never wear masks, and the president is holding indoor rallies in mega churches. Why does the United States have 87 times the number of COVID deaths per capita as New Zealand? How did this happen? Our guests have roots in New Zealand, as well as some expertise in understanding the flow of information that'll help guide decisions. And joining us this hour, we welcome Mike Johansson, a New Zealand native, social media strategist, and senior lecturer of communication at RIT. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
And Chris Thomas is a senior counsel with Nixon Peabody, whose family has roots in New Zealand. And it's always nice to talk to Chris. It's been a little while. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, and I'm Mike Johansson. You especially are not going to like me saying this, but I'm going to say it, okay? I did invite an Aussie who could not join us, but Australia has been nearly as good. Now, we know that Australia is a clearly inferior place as compared to New Zealand. We know that, as you've told me many times. But
come on now.
Australia's been outstanding, though. It's almost the same number per capita as New Zealand. So I just want to say New Zealand, I think, is what we're going to focus on. But those two nations have been really outstanding. But Mike, how much of this is geography? I mean, New Zealand has kind of closed its borders pretty strongly. And we've seen, for example, Scandinavia, a lot of talk about Sweden, but then a lot of talk about Denmark, for example, with a geographic advantage. How much of this is geography?
Well, first of all, I have to say, my mother grew up in Australia, so I'm part Australian, and I just had a lovely Vegemite and cheese sandwich in your honor.
That's gross. So that's really good. That stuff really,
I will be the last Kiwi awful to put any Australian down.
Vegemite is really awful, and there's just no swaying me on this, but go ahead.
If I was a real Kiwi, it would have been a Marmite and cheese sandwich. But anyway, back to your question. I think the geography thing is quite overblown. It's an easy out. Other countries that have been highly successful in fighting COVID, like South Africa and Vietnam, they all have land borders with other countries. I think the border thing is just an easy way to say, well, it's an isolated country, therefore it was easy. I think the far more important thing to look at is how decisively and how quickly the country shut things down and how willingly the majority of the population went along with a prime minister who was saying, this is what we need to do right here, right now. In other words, a national unified policy.
Well, let's listen, if we could. I think we've got a clip of Jacinda Ardern, and this is from March 25th, from the evening of March 25th in New Zealand. And in this clip, she's wearing sort of an old sweatshirt. She's at home, and you'll hear her mention she just put the kids down to bed. But she's trying to answer any questions she can. This was a social media address, and it was a chance for her to further explain the policy. Think about the tone that you're hearing here and ask yourself if this is the kind of tone you've heard in this country. This is Jacinda Ardern.
Evening, everyone. That I would jump online quickly and just check in with everyone, really, as we all prepare to hunker down for a few weeks. Excuse the casual attire. It's can be a messy business putting toddlers to bed, so I'm not in my work clothes, so forgive me for that. I do just want to prepare everyone that because of the lag with COVID-19, the time from someone having contact with someone who has it, catching it themselves, them being symptomatic and being tested and positive, it's a number of days before all of that happens. So we won't see the positive benefits of all of the effort you're about to put in for self-isolation for a few days yet, quite a number of days. I'd say at least 10 days. So don't be disheartened. Our numbers are going to go up. And the modelling I've seen suggests that they will go up quite considerably. We'll see quite a steep rise. In fact, I'm expecting we may see several thousand cases over a period of time until we then will start to, we hope, see the effects of what we're doing with self-isolation having a positive impact. So don't be disheartened when you see that. Don't be disheartened when you see that ongoing increase because of that lag. All of the efforts that we're putting in should eventually show if we all follow the rules.
That's what she said on March 25th. Mike Johansson, how much does that tone sound familiar or unfamiliar in this country?
Well, very unfamiliar, right? Because the tone here has been from federal offices. There have been conflicting messages. There have been, you know, on the one hand, everything will be fine. We'll get back to business as usual. A few national health figures saying, you know, slow down. We can't do that quickly. On the state level, I think we've been pretty lucky having a governor who has taken it very seriously, listened to the science. But I think the contrast is pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a different approach for sure. And when she said in that clip that based on the modeling she's seen, there could be several thousand cases, the total number of cases in New Zealand has been held to about 1,100. And again, just 22 deaths, as we said. So that was a prime minister saying to the country, what we are all about to do together is going to be hard, but we're going to do it together. You know, there wasn't shaming. And she indicated that she was going to be part of it.
Did you see the original prediction? Sorry to interrupt. Did you see the original prediction for the number of deaths in New Zealand?
I in terms of deaths, I did not.
Okay, so the original prediction was 20,000 deaths if something didn't happen fairly quickly. And even with flattening, they thought they could get that down to 14,000 deaths, which would have been the equivalent of 1 million deaths in the U.S. And they ended up having 22 deaths, just 22.
It was very fast action, and it was a country that decided, you know, everything I'm reading, and our guests will know better than I, a country that decided to get on board with the changes pretty quickly. I'm sure not all 5 million people loved it, but Chris Thomas, tell me a little bit about your family background. I mean, I know your lovely mother is a joy and one of my favorite people in Rochester, but tell me a little bit more about your family background in New Zealand.
Well, he is a New Zealander born and bred on the North Island in an area called the Waikato, a little town. He grew up on a farm outside of a little town called Cambridge. She was one of five. She was the only one of her family to have left New Zealand. All the rest of her siblings are there, and with the exception of one of my second cousins who is over in Brisbane right now, they all still live in New Zealand, and we get over to see them quite regularly, and they come over to see us here in Rochester quite regularly. So I would say, you know, good, strong family ties, and we remain in fairly good contact via FaceTime and WhatsApp and, you know, different web-based communication tools like that.
What did you make of what you just heard in that clip from Jacinda Ardern versus what you hear on a daily basis in the United States from leadership?
Well, it's night and day, and you know, I think it's much more in line with what we've been hearing from Dr. Mendoza and Adam Bellow than it is, you know, what we've been hearing from the president and some of his supporters. And I think you see the differences in the results. I think, as Mike was just saying, you know, there was crystal clear communication from the beginning. There was, you know, really dramatic action taken. And even before that presentation on the 25th by the Prime Minister. I think that they had closed their borders maybe 8 or 10 days mm-hmm. earlier. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a very clear message was given. And then I think of just as much importance was the tools that were put into place, the implementation that was put in place in terms of testing and tracing. And on that regard, on that front, you know, my family has some specific information about it, and I'd be happy to talk about that if you'd like.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, because testing and tracing is something that we heard from very early on in the United States was going to be key if we were going to get out of defensive mode, play offense, really bend down the curve and try to get to a sense of normalcy. We still really haven't gotten there widespread in this country. What have you been hearing in New Zealand, Chris?
Well, so my cousin is married, and she and her husband were on a cruise on an American flagged ship that was down at the Cape of Good Hope, while my wife and I were over in India. This was about March 5th or 6th when things were really starting to pop around the world. The Chilean government refused to allow their ship to dock, and so they drifted out, but they ran circles off the coast of Santiago for over a week before the Chilean government, even though there were no announced cases of COVID on the boat, would allow the boat to dock so as to let just the Chileans off. Then they steamed up to San Diego, where they were allowed to dock. They flew back to New Zealand, and upon return to New Zealand, they were politely escorted into quarantine, and they were tested. And my cousin's husband, as a matter of fact, had COVID, and so he was quarantined for a 14-day period, and they call it a managed quarantine. So it's not like you're just going back to your house and, you know, hanging out and going over to the New Zealand version of Wegmans and picking up what you want. You're in your quarantine location, and the National Health Service is stopping by on a daily basis. They said they looked in on him every single day to ensure that he was staying at the house, and he, of course, had no intention of going anywhere. I was frankly a little surprised they let him go to his home in Hamilton, which is about, Michael know better than me, probably 2 hours or hour and a half car ride from Auckland, because what they're doing now is at least having foreign travelers quarantine and or isolate. And those are two different terms that they use. You're quarantined if you're positive. You're isolating if you're just arriving from a foreign country at hotels. And they have specific places set up where they're doing that. And, you know, I just want to reflect on that for a second, because that's the kind of aggressive community health that we just don't have here. You know, we don't have places where people are being quarantined. We don't have places where people are having managed isolation. And Americans, I think, would go crazy at the idea that, you know, they, at least at this point, maybe when the pandemic first began, there would be a little bit of more compliance. But at this point, the idea of an American being forced into a quarantine would, you know, would set Fox News ablaze. You know, the other thing that they've been doing and is having what they call a QR code. It's a QR code that you take a picture of, and it enables, hold on to your hats, Americans, it enables the government to know where it is you have been. Why does that matter? So they can trace if you were positive where you've been and people you might have been exposed to. Again, could we have done that in this country? Even, putting aside the fact that this country is, you know, how many do we have? 350 million people, and they have about 5 million people. Just let's just set that reality aside for a moment. And, you know, our makeup simply wouldn't allow for it, I don't think.
Well, and so I'm glad you bring this up, because I wanted your perspective on this from the cultural side and from sort of the legal side here. And I want to ask both of you about this. What we're talking about with quarantine, that is a term in the United States that most people hear quarantine. They go, oh, you got COVID, you're quarantined. That just means you're home for 2 weeks. You might be with family. You may be, you know, mostly just hanging out in your room and watching movies. Quarantine in Asia, similar to what we're talking about New Zealand and in some other countries, means, yeah, they've got a facility set up for you to go to for 2 weeks. You know,
right.
Sometimes it's a hotel, but sometimes it's a large facility. It's pretty sparse. You got sleeping quarters. You can hang out, but you're not hanging out with friends. You're not seeing family. And there's a writer. There's an American writer, and he's a conservative, by the way. His name is Lyman Stone, and he lives in Hong Kong now. Now, he, of course, has been watching up close how Hong Kong bent the curve. And this American conservative writer says, forget lockdowns. Forget anything else. I mean, he says the two things that matter are masks and quarantines. And what he means by quarantines are actual quarantine, separation from family, separation from people for 2 weeks. And he says Americans have to get off this idea that that's some sort of infringement or it's a non-starter. He says even I, as a conservative, understand that this has been how you deal and live in a pandemic. But, Chris, two things, and I'll start with you. Culturally, legally, any chance this country would ever do anything like that?
Zero.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it, right?
Culturally, forget about it. I mean, you know, there are a number of us who, you know, put the community above self, but there is, I think, just as large number or even larger that, you know, put their individual rights above the rights of others. And I just see it as, you know, being a significant cultural barrier for us to ever have a really meaningful, you know, public health response to this pandemic or the next one. And legally, of course, you know, there'd be all sorts of lawsuits instantly filed. You know, I'm sure there's lawsuits filed over, you know, mask wearing. And that's like, on a scale of 1 to 100, that's 1 on the scale of intrusion as compared to, you know, telling people that they're going to have to go sit somewhere for 14 days.
Yeah. Mike Johansson, you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've lived here for 30 plus years now, and, you know, I love this country and I love the people in it, but the very independent streak that founded this country, you know, stand up for your own rights, don't let the government or the king tell you what to do, I think actually works against Americans generally as a society. You know, it's you know, this autonomous thing that I can do what I want. It's my choice. You know, that's a hard thing to overcome when there's a societal problem at hand.
Well, speaking of that mentality, CNN put together a collection of comments made at the Palm Beach County Commissioners meeting in Florida this week. Florida, like Texas, is a state that is seeing a surge in cases. Texas and Arizona in particular are very concerned about the next couple of weeks of hospital and ICU capacity, and there is considerable conversation about limiting elective surgeries just as we did here, and we don't do that anymore here, not right now at least. They're thinking about that in Houston. The largest medical center in the world is thinking, in, at least in the country, is thinking about that. Florida has its own surge, and in Palm Beach County, they were simply talking about, hey, we're not going to close everything, but can more of you wear masks? This was some of the result at the Palm Beach County Commissioners meeting.
You literally cannot mandate somebody to wear a mask knowing that that mask is killing people. It literally is killing people. And we the people, are waking up, and we know what citizens' arrest is, because citizens' arrests are already happening, okay? And every single one of you that are obeying the devil's laws are going to be arrested. And you, doctor, are going to be arrested for crimes against humanity.
The problem with humanity today is ignorance, arrogance, and apathy. Keep taking the road of least resistance. Keep listening to the TV brainwashing you from birth.
And they want to throw God's wonderful breathing system out the door. You're all turning your backs on it.
Doctor, I really have many question marks about your degrees and what you really know. I'm sorry, ma'am, but I don't think that you are worthy of your credentials. And I would ask suggestively that you go back to school and get educated.
Okay.
Wow.
let me start with an important point, just factually for listeners. Masks are not killing people literally or figuratively. Masks are helping, and there is a good, growing body of actual study and evidence. That doesn't mean masks solve everything, but they are absolutely a useful tool And they're an important tool, and they're not a political or cultural tool. They're just a tool that you can use or not. They're not killing anybody. But typically, this is where it's hard for me. And I'll start with you on this one, Mike. This one's hard because I try to really show empathy for people who are frustrated, who are hurting, who are dealing with the pandemic in different ways. And so I'm really trying to resist any sort of snark I feel about that. But those comments, and that was a small sampling. There was even more. Those comments are unfortunately larger in number than I would have guessed going into this pandemic. And I think they're really risking people's lives. I think people are dying because of it. And I don't know what to do because I look at New Zealand and I don't see, I don't know, did you have public meetings in New Zealand where people are a small number but vocal number were saying that? Not that I saw.
No, and I don't know about public meetings either, but I do know I have quite a few friends in New Zealand on Facebook, and there definitely were criticisms of the government for being too draconian, too tough, too forceful, mm-hmm. keeping things in place too long. But I think those voices get drowned out by the people who say, look at us compared to the rest of the world. I mean, they're having rugby matches now with, 10, 12, 15,000 people showing up, no masks, but back to normal. It's hard to fight the facts. And I think that the challenge, I think, here is partly to do with the communication. There has not been a unified message from top to bottom. There hasn't been a consistent wear a mask, social distance, wash your hands. It's important. The examples haven't been set from the top. You know, when you have people from the top standing around in a cluster of people, none of them wearing masks, holding a press conference, that doesn't set a good example. You know, they don't have to wear a mask. Why should I? And so I think that's one of the issues. Another thing that, this sort of gets to the whole policing thing, which I don't really want to go too deep into, but in places where these restrictions were put in place and there were penalties for violating them, there was a national police force. There's one policy, one pronouncement and one enforcement authority. And so in New Zealand, I was reading this morning to get ready for this, there were over 350 prosecutions for people violating the isolation rules. And so, I don't know what the consequences were. I'm pretty sure it's probably just small fines, but it was sort of a, example to people. But here you've got policing authorities, down to the level of a local village, all the way up to state. You don't really have one national unified federal authority. You don't really have a national federal policy per se or rules per se on how to deal with this. So it's a patchwork. And, as a result, this is what you get, I guess.
Chris Thomas, what do you think?
No, I totally agree with that. And again, if we had to just think about the differences here, our heads would blow up if we were ordered to quarantine. Our heads would probably blow up if we were ordered into managed isolation. Our heads would blow up if our government had a QR code that we were expected to, track where we were going. And what Mike is referring to is what they call the COVID compliance center. It's as Mike was saying, it's a single national entity to which you can call and say, hey, look, my neighbor is, having too many people over, what have you. And our heads would blow up if we had that as well. It's that streak of, rights over responsibilities that, has made this country unique in a lot of ways that Mike was talking about a second ago. But it also, it results in a polarization. And I'm only 55, I say only, but I can't remember when we have been as polarized as this about everything. And everything becomes political. And, frankly, I believe that, even if Donald Trump had from the very first put a really heavy, had done a Jacinda Ardern, there would still be, radical resistance.
There'd be less, though.
There'd be less. There's no doubt about it. There would be less, a lot less. But there would still be, there'd still be resistance.
Yeah, so. I think that's right, Chris. But, the first time when masking really kind of came up end of March, early April, and the president said at a news conference, well, I'm not going to wear one. The second he said that, I thought, we're in trouble here.
Yeah.
This is going straight to the culture war. And I was naive in March. I thought, well, here's something that won't be part of the culture war. This will be a collective response that will bring a lot of people together because, you know, if we have vulnerable loved ones at risk, it doesn't matter what your voting registration is or what your political ideology is.
Everything's political today.
It's really remarkable. But before I grab a phone call, because I think Rich's phone call is going to dovetail on this point, you know, you could argue that New Zealand, 5 million people, even Australia, 25 million people, can create more of a cohesive national approach, as Mike Johansson says, one sort of national enforcement mechanism, et cetera. And we're just too large of a country. So one thing to do in the face of that might be to despair and say, well, you know, we're never going to be able to get it together. But another thing, and I'll ask both of you, Chris, I'm looking at, you know, our country, and New York State is 10 million people. It's twice the size of New Zealand. But it could be the kind of thing where you could see regional approaches. And I think ultimately that's where we're going, where you're going to see much more sort of mask wearing in probably the Northeast or in certain parts of the country that decide it's important. Then you'll probably see pockets where or regions where it is not. And it will be sort of a patchwork in that regard. But it doesn't mean that you can't see some cohesion and sort of collective rallying in parts.
I think that's right, because let's face it, you know, down south, it's not going to happen. You know, the results are obvious. You know, there's a tremendous uptick, and that's going to inevitably result in many, many, many more deaths. You know, can New Yorkers or people in the Northeast rally to the extent that is necessary to bring us down to Australia and New Zealand-like levels? No, but we'll do better.
Mike, what do you think?
I'd like to be optimistic, but frankly, what concerns me perhaps the most right now is the free flow of people between states that where the thing is on the rise, and those states where they've done a decent job holding it down to this point. You know, I know the governor's sort of asking people who are coming into New York State, for example, to quarantine, self-quarantine. Well, you can ask, but is that really? I mean, these people still go through the airport, and they maybe still get an Uber. They maybe, you know, go to the store or a mall, and you know, they're in Arizona. They've been in Arizona. It's making them nervous, so they decide, you know what, I'm going to go back to my home in New York and get away from all this. So, yeah, I'd like to be optimistic, but I'm afraid it's tough.
Well, Rich in Rochester, what do you think?
I don't know what to think, Evan. How are you doing?
All right, my friend. Yeah.
But I think this also points to the weakness of our, I don't really like to even use the term medical system. We're talking about developed countries, New Zealand and the like, and in Europe, that they have national health systems. And with that, you have coordination, you have all your research and everything done at a certain level. We have this patchwork of all these private companies and entities trying to coordinate something, and then the closest thing we have to a national health system, the NIH and the CDC, the president is doing everything to break those two. So the system that really should be there to support all this and to drive all this, this country doesn't have. I don't know if it will ever have it, and I think this is a huge, this should be a huge situation we're talking about too. Not only the government as far as our president, but our infrastructure is horrible. And this is pointing it out. This pandemic is just showing that it doesn't exist.
Thank you, Rich. Go ahead.
And then you have your states, like you said, you have your states trying to do something, but I can walk across the, you go down to Matamoros, New York, you go down to Virginia, three states intersecting right there. What are you going to do? Stop people from walking across the street? Right there. You got New Jersey, luckily New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania are doing a decent job. But that's the way our country is built. I don't know what we're going to do, but the medical system is a huge hole in this entire picture that no one's talking about.
I'm glad you brought it up, Rich. We hadn't gotten to that yet. That's important. Mike Johansson, what do you think?
Well, naturally, I would agree. I mean, I still don't understand why there's so much resistance to some kind of national healthcare system here. It saves costs. It saves lives.
Mike. It's infringing on our freedoms. It's infringing on we. I'm saying that with my tongue firmly in cheek, but you know that has been the basis of the legal challenges against the Affordable Care Act. It's infringing. It's forcing Americans to do something that the government doesn't have the right to do, and that's coming from our Supreme Court. I just don't see us. Maybe the pandemic will push us towards a better healthcare system, but it's so deeply ingrained. The resistance is so deeply ingrained to having a unified healthcare system. And I was rudely interrupting Mike when he was pointing out the obvious things, which is at least in well-run systems, it costs less. And are they perfect systems? No, of course not. But at the communal level, they're a lot better than this insane system that we have now.
Well, Mike, you've been in the United States for roughly 30 years. What's been the quality of care difference as you've experienced? Though I will say that as younger people, as the three of us on this program once were, we were invincible in our teens and 20s, So, boy, you get to your 40s. Plus, it's amazing. Every little ding turns into sort of a crisis. But I am curious to know, Mike, what your experience has been in the health systems, New Zealand and the United States.
Well, I mean, I think the big difference, bear in mind that I left New Zealand when I was 25. So,
back in your invincible days, yes.
Exactly. and needing minimal care. But whenever I did need care, I could get it the day I wanted it. X-rays, see a doctor, whatever. No paperwork, simple small copay. If you're over 21 and under 65, I think at that time there was a very small copay. I think it might have been $5. And that was the total cost to you, period. It was great. I come to America and I'm filling out forms forever. The one time I had to go to an emergency room, I sat and waited for over 2 hours. I filled out paperwork and then sat in a cubicle for another hour to see a doctor. I think the whole experience was about 4.5 hours, and then was more paperwork after that. And then there was a bill on what health insurance wouldn't cover. So, it's almost as if some crazy person would go, let's see how complicated we can make this system.
Our guests are talking about the difference between the United States and New Zealand in the response to the coronavirus pandemic. And Mike Johansson, as you hear from his distinctly New Zealand accent, don't be confusing him with an Australian. He's a New Zealand, and he's a social media strategist, a senior lecturer of communication at RIT. Chris Thomas has got a lot of family in New Zealand, and he's a partner with Nixon Peabody, and whose family, again, of course, has roots there. And we've got some very interesting phone calls and emails to take. I've got to get our only break of the hour in, but we're going to get your phone calls that will talk about sort of the history of infectious disease and maybe some of the lessons we're failing to learn. I also want to take some of your emails in regards to whether women in leadership are achieving different results than men when it comes to the pandemic. That's one email. And there's a former news anchor in the United States who moved back to New Zealand in 2011, and she had some interesting comments about an emphasis on being kind. And we're going to talk about that as well after our only break. Coming up in our second hour, choir performances have been halted during the pandemic. One big reason for that was a super spreader event in which dozens of people got sick in the Seattle area early in the pandemic. Yes, there's a concern about indoor spread of the virus. And yes, singing and sort of putting your voice out there loudly can spread the virus. But are we going too far? Can we get music back on stage? We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Back to your phone calls. Mary in Geneva, listening on WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Evan.
Go ahead.
Evan, when I was a child, way back in the 1940s, I had scarlet fever, and this was before penicillin. My whole family was quarantined. I can still remember the doctor made a house call. can you imagine? I can still remember the uh-oh, and immediately I was in my bedroom, and I didn't come out for 3 weeks. My mother had to put on a special garment over her clothes. She came in 3 times a day to bring me food and to empty the pot. Other than that, I was in that bedroom for 3 weeks. My father, in order to go to work, had to move in with my grandparents. Today, people don't understand the danger of infectious disease. They don't understand what it was like before penicillin, before we had the vaccine for polio. I get so frustrated with people being unwilling to think outside of themselves in order to stop the spread of this virus.
Mary, thank you for that perspective. And unfortunately, I think your story just reflects that some of the results of success, i.e. vaccines, erase our collective memory over time. Eventually, you're going to have a population that hasn't been all that sick. And they think, what is the big deal with all of this? Well, Mary's story is a great illustration of what people can go through. But on the other side of this, Chris Thomas, you hear Mary talking about 3 weeks in a bedroom and hunkering down and dealing with this and people not understanding just how dangerous infectious diseases can be. Well, here's Matthew who sends me a note that says, quarantine contact tracing equals surveillance state. Okay, Chris Thomas, I mean, I guess that sums up what you were saying earlier. People are going to view it that way, and they're just not going to get on board.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the fact that I watched a couple of those clips that you played at the top of the show from, was it whatever,
CNN,
Palm Beach County or somewhere.
Palm Beach, yep.
Yeah, and the fact that people would get onto what they know is a recorded session of a government entity, and to say really things that are just bonkers crazy, and they weren't mentally ill people in terms of, you know, actively hallucinating or anything like that. They were just normal Americans voicing a clearly firmly held belief, and are fine with it being recorded for all of eternity. It just tells you how deeply ingrained, you know, this sort of conspiracy theory, anti-vax strain is, you know, rugged individualism, if you want to call it that. I just view it as a different form of groupthink, is in this country, and how virulent it has become since the 1940s that Mary was just talking about.
Well, okay, so Chris and Mike, and Chris, let me just follow up with you. Yes, I understand that point, but New Zealand has Facebook too, where a lot of this stuff gains velocity, and they have a whole lot less of that kind of resistance to just basic response to a pandemic. What is unique here, Chris?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about that, and I'll, obviously Mike, I think, has the better view on it. I, you know, dealing with my cousins on a fairly regular basis, you know, I think that there are two things. First of all, I think that there is a better education system, and that
in New Zealand,
in way better in New Zealand. It's not even close. And you know, I think that there's also, and I say this, you know, one of my cousins is a rampant Trump supporter, but even she is like, oh, this is common sense. Of course, we're going to do this. And that there is an underlying core of exalting basically common sense and science and math above, you know, sort of wackadoodle conspiracy theories like you were, you know, playing at the top of the hour. So I think there are significant cultural differences and different there's a higher level of education overall.
Mike Jay?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the risk of being New Zealand proud, I would say the education is a bit broader. Part of that might be because it's a smaller country, has a sort of a narrower history of its own. So we were taught a lot of history about other parts of the world. I mean, I remember my daughter as a teenager saying she was surprised how much American history I knew, and I just learned that stuff in school. But I also think there's something else going on too, and this is, again, referencing my daughter again, not meaning to do it twice, but when I'm out for a walk I always say good morning or hello to everyone I pass. It's that little human, mini human connection kind of thing. And I don't know if it's a New Zealand thing. It's just something I've always done. And I know people like my daughter and other people that walk with me comment on that. Why are you saying hello to strangers? And I'm just, I don't know. I just, it strikes me as that's what you do. It's part of being part of society. It's a small, friendly little gesture. And I think there is that a bit more of a sense of community in that sense. You know, I can sort of tell, like when I'm walking the Erie Canal Trail path, for example, you know, the people who respond, sometimes they seem a little surprised, but they actually genuinely smile and say hello back. And there are others that look at you like, you must be a foreigner or you must be from another planet. And I think that's part of the dichotomy, if you like, is that some people are just not that way, I guess. And as a society, if you're not feeling that you're part of a bigger group, part of a bigger society, if you, I mean, you feel like you're one cell in a large organism, if you don't feel that way, it's going to be harder to feel that empathy and kindness and say, you know what, I'm going to wear a mask to protect everyone else.
Well, and that may be one of those insights that's in that category of small thing, big thing, because it dovetails with a couple of other things I was going to bring up here. Here's an email from Meredith who says, I would greatly recommend a book that explains the cultural differences between the U.S. and New Zealand and also illuminates the COVID-19 issue. It's called Fairness and Freedom. Basically, New Zealand's founding was motivated by a focus on fairness. Our founding was focused on freedom. And a former Sacramento news anchor named Palace Hoop-Cotter is now living in New Zealand and moved back in 2011. And she says it's been a phenomenal experience. And right now she's been writing a lot about the focus and the sense of purpose New Zealand has as a country in eliminating the coronavirus. And here's what she said in a recent interview with her old colleagues back at Fox 40 Sacramento. She says, quote, our experience in New Zealand was go hard, get this done, be as safe as possible, lock down, eliminate this virus. And once that decision was made, the community coalesced around the political leadership and went in that direction. And there was a lot of emphasis on being kind, end quote. That's the part of the quote that really hit me, Mike. I'm a big fan of that approach in every aspect of life. And I fall short when I host this program too often, when I get sort of heated or I get snarky, because I think it's important to show empathy. I think, as Chris was saying, I mean, the people at the Palm Beach County Commissioners meeting were not there to just troll. They truly believe that God's breathing system means you don't ever have to wear a mask and you won't get the virus. It's not right, but they believe that. And I don't think it does a whole lot of good to shame or mock, but that comment from Palace Hoop-Cotter about an emphasis on being kind is extraordinary to me, because I don't hear anybody at the federal level in leadership saying, this is going to be hard, so be kind to one another, be patient to one another. Why do you think that cultural difference is there, Mike?
Well, I don't know that I'm best placed to answer that question in a sense, because, you know, I am the outsider in that sense. I do find myself checking myself occasionally, you know, when I see someone post something on social media, you know, which is something, you know, I look at quite a bit, that it seems really idiotic, stupid, or just flat out wrong. You know, I find myself checking myself, and my initial reaction is, boy, that person's dumb. And I think to myself, now, wait a minute, why do they think that? Why do they truly believe that? Why did they share that? Mm-hmm. And so I question myself before I sort of jump to that first, you know, obvious perhaps conclusion, being judgmental. And I just don't know that there's enough of that going around. I'm not sort of holding myself up as some sort of great example, but I think the world would be a much better place if we all tried to understand why people are thinking the way they're thinking, where they're coming from, and what might be motivating or driving them to think things that the rest of us think are, to quote Chris, wackadoodle.
Well, but I think the actual overt emphasis, Chris Thomas, on being kind is important. Setting that model from the top, as New Zealand leadership has done. And frankly, when I read your long chronicles of your bike adventures in the American South, you meet wonderfully kind people who rib you for being a Yankee, or they joke with you that, well, now you're in real America, as right. I read in one of your stories, but they're still kind and they offer a place to stay and they want to get to know you and you want to get to know them. I love those stories, and I don't think that they're just apocryphal or sort of cliche. I think they really matter in this pandemic, and I don't feel like we are emphasizing kindness enough right now.
Well, yeah, that, I mean, I've had some great trips down south, and, you know, I think if you go virtually anywhere in this world with, you know, an open heart and an open mind, you're going to meet great people everywhere. This is different. I don't get why it is that people would want to put other people at risk. And I know that some of the people who I've stayed with and who have opened their homes to me and, you know, have given me a sandwich or an ice cream cone or whatever along the way are people who would say, mask? Heck no, I'm not doing that. So there's the possibility of being kind and being resistant to things that are good for the public health mm-hmm. all at the same time. Or people can have those qualities and traits within them at the same time. I'll go back to the South in a minute once this pandemic is sorted out and there's a vaccine. I've had great trips down there, but I just sort of rub my eyes and scratch my head at a few of the, you know, the leaders that are saying, yeah, masks are irrelevant, social distancing, let's not really worry about it.
Right, or they're weak, you know, as if masks like are some sort of a signal of toughness or weakness.
Well, and I think that, you know, we have our president to thank for some of that,
mm-hmm.
Or to blame for a lot of that, and that messaging has made its way through to, you know, Republican governors. You know, I contrast it with the way Governor Cuomo's been handling this, and he's, I think, you know, this whole concept of New York tough, you know, I think he was using, you know, that phrase pretty regularly and saying that, you know, it also means that we're kind.
And loving. He puts loving in there. Yeah, he does.
Yeah. And so, I think that when there isn't shaming about wearing a mask and when it's modeled as being something that's useful, there's a heck of a lot of value in that. And you know, I think the idea of being kind to your neighbor and being respectful to your neighbor and your neighbor's health and the health of, you know, his or her grandparent that they may be in contact with, to me, it's a relatively simple thing to do. But as the emailer said, this is, many people think it's the start of a surveillance state. It's the start of a nanny state. You know, insert whatever, you know, phrase you'd like, and it is a common core in current American thought. And for me, it's really depressing that we cannot unify really over anything now. I mean, were we to get invaded by some country today, would we even be able to unify around the defense of our nation? Who knows?
Yeah.
Think of that, just to jump in real quick. One of the great pieces I read, I think last week in the New York Times, referred to this as an alien invasion. Why can't America get together to fight an alien invasion? That's what it is.
Well, speaking of the sweet tones of the South, we got to keep it tight. But this is Jane in Rochester. Hi, Jane.
Yes, I think, Evan, that someone asked, where does this come from? This sort of thinking, as the woman at the beginning of your program was saying things that just seem so crazy. But I think it gets back to business, and they want to downplay the dangers of the virus. And if people wear masks, it's always a reminder, and that could affect tourism. And they're fanatical about their tourism in that particular state. I used to live down there. But as for masks, I want to say this. Masks are not new. The police use them in certain instances. We have the military that uses them. We have surgeons. Why haven't all the doctors and surgeons died if it's such a terrible thing? And if you don't trust the commercial mask, you can make your own. So I think that if you look deep enough, it's the business community that wants it, wants people to forget about it and come down to Florida and look what they got. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Well, about 30 seconds apiece. But Jane's right, by the way. Surgeons wear masks all the time, and they're very healthy people. Thank goodness. Real quick, 30 seconds. Mike, Patrick emails to say it's female leadership, at least in part, that we're seeing in New Zealand. We need it here. Do you think there's something to that?
Well, there might be. I think there's a natural feeling of empathy and kindness that emanates from women leaders that maybe doesn't emanate from men. So there's probably an aspect of that for sure. But I don't think you can say that's the whole thing.
Yes, and it's actually possible for men to show empathy. I mean, it's amazing.
Exactly.
It is possible. Chris Thomas, what do you think?
About female leadership?
Yeah.
Well, look, you know, there are terrific female leaders. There's horrible female leaders. Is there something in that chromosome that makes for a better leader? Probably not, but maybe something in the you know, the enculturation of a female leader that you know, lends to some empathy. I'm just very pessimistic about our country's ability to come together for any purpose. Much less a pandemic. We haven't been able to do it. I don't see us doing it. And, you know, while they're watching rugby in a giant pack-filled stadium in New Zealand, we don't even know if we're going to get an NFL season.
Yeah.
Let that sink in.
Yeah. Well, on that note, Chris Thomas from Nixon Peabody with family with roots in New Zealand, thank you for the perspective, and I do hope to see you soon, my friend.
Oh, we'll set something up.
Chris Thomas and Mike Johansson, great as always. Mike's a New Zealand native, social media strategist, lecturer of communication at RIT. Thank you, Mike.
Hey, thank you, and nice to meet you by phone, Chris.
You guys would like each other. You're great guys. More connections coming up.